They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to the Crossover NBA Podcast. On this episode, we're going to get into all things NBA Draft Lottery. I'm recording this from Chicago, the site of the Draft Lottery. A lot of drama. One of the more interesting draft lotteries I can remember. The New Orleans Pelicans, they get the number one pick. The Knicks fall to three. A handful of the tanking teams fall out of the top four. A lot to get into there. As always, best way to support this podcast, head over to Apple Podcasts where you can post a rating or leave a comment. Maybe you can do both. It's easy. It's free. It is the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. Also, if you like boxing, subscribe to the SI Boxing Podcast hosted by yours truly. That podcast also comes out every week. While you're at it, subscribe to SITV, my new show, In the Paint. That is up on SITV. My first guest was NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. That show appears every week, usually early in the weeks, but sometimes with travel, you have to mix that up a little. All right, so joining me now, recording again from Chicago, the site of this year's lottery, SI front office and NBA draft analyst, Jeremy Wu. Jeremy, what's up, man?
You know, it's a busy week, a lot of fun stuff going on behind the scenes. I think the lottery kind of left everyone in a sort of a tailspin after last night, and you know, definitely went the way I think the league was hoping with you know, the randomness.
Well, that was one of my first takeaways, because, and even Alvin Gentry in the drawing room said something to the effect of, you know, we're not a tanking team, and I couldn't tell my guys to tank even if they wanted to. And we saw that at the top of the lottery. I mean, you had New Orleans getting the number one pick, and they didn't tank. I mean, they had their season derailed by the Anthony Davis stuff, and they were trying to win throughout. And with the second pick, Memphis. I mean, Memphis was the team all towards the end of the season that didn't want that top eight pick and was trying to convey it to Boston. So they were trying to win games all the way through the end. Now, I think Memphis is glad how it turned out. I think they'll happily take the number two pick in the draft and not convey it. But I think it's good for the NBA that maybe this will even further disincentivize tanking if this is how it plays out.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And every year we kind of, you know, pull hairs about, you know, one win, one loss, this, that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's so random. I mean, you know, just Pelicans lucking in the odds they had. I mean, maybe one bounce of the ball is different and they don't get the combination. And at the end of the day, you know, you can't control that. And definitely, I think, a win for that whole, you know, revamping of the system. I think in terms of, you know, getting interest from different fan bases, you know, now going to next year, hey, you know, you can sell it, that aspect of it. I don't think it's rigged. I think it's too hard to rig. But if it were, wouldn't not have been a bad outcome.
Yeah, it's definitely too hard to rig. That's for sure. But, you know, the first question I have for you, as someone that has covered Zion Williamson throughout the course of this year, what do you think he's thinking today? I mean, he was there at the lottery and everyone was kind of pointing him in the direction of the Knicks. I love Knicks fans on social media getting just absolutely just miserable over something that had an 86% chance of happening. They had a 14% chance of landing that top overall pick. They had an 86% chance of landing something else, and they're just shocked that they didn't get number one. But what do you think Zion is thinking right now? Because he was always kind of earmarked for New York. He was asked all the time, what about the Knicks? What about the Knicks? And I think for a teenager, it must have settled into his brain on some level that he was going to be a Knick.
Yeah, you know, it's probably just he's processing all this stuff. And, you know, he is here, so he does. I can't imagine he has more than, like, two interviews today, right? But, you know, he's here, so he's going through it. I think at the end of the day, I think he should be happy with, you know, how it turned out. I mean, you know, barring some crazy thing happening, I mean, New Orleans is not, you know, I think this result just totally changes the trajectory of that organization. I mean, whether or not they keep Anthony Davis, you know, now if you're trading him, you're going to get, you know, whatever you want back, and you'll have Zion, you know, to build around, you know, whether that's more picks or another player or whatever. But it really gives, I mean, it's a big trump card for them, you know, to play, I think. And, you know, at least going with David Griffin there, it's an organization, you know, he's a guy who's won, you know, he's won with LeBron, you know, he knows how to manage and deal with, you know, the expectations, you know, when you have a star, right? So I think it's a pretty all things considered, and also they have like such a small media contingent there, right? So it's, maybe he will avoid the cameras a little bit, right?
I mean, they definitely will. It's definitely a different lifestyle if he goes down to New Orleans. I mean, he's going to New Orleans too. Yeah. I mean, there's zero chance that they trade that draft pick. In fact, the Pelicans are in an unbelievable position right now. I don't believe, and I haven't talked to anybody in Davis's inner circle in the last 24 hours, but I don't believe that this changed the calculus for him at all. I think there's still a commitment amongst people around him and him himself to get out and preferably get to the Lakers. You know, that's still their top objective, and the Lakers certainly improved their chances of making a Davis deal. But even if they have to trade him, I mean, you now have Zion Williamson to build around, and whatever Anthony Davis brings back. And I've always said that Anthony Davis should fetch a Herschel Walker type of package.
Absolutely.
Like, he should be the biggest trade package in NBA history because of his age and his skill set. But as far as Zion goes, put into context for me just how good is he? Like, you know, is he, he's clearly the consensus number one, but would he be the consensus number one in like every draft for the last 10 years? Would there be a debate in some other drafts? I mean, how good is Zion Williamson?
Yeah, I think in most drafts, I think if you just look at the season that he had and the way in which he did what he did, and you look at him as a, you know, the total package as a guy, you know, I think there are a lot of drafts where he would be the consensus number one. Now, what that means, it's not necessarily commensurate with, you know, projecting him, but I think that there's definitely a clear pathway for him to sort of dominate in a way that we haven't really seen before because he's so unique. I think, in my mind, the vision with him has always been you develop him to the point where you can put the ball in his hands a lot of the time because, you know, if you can spread it out and put shooters around him, he's a good passer. I think it's still an underrated part of his game. And, you know, he's got to get better off the dribble. Hopefully, you got to keep him in shape. You got to hope he doesn't get hurt. I think the injury concerns, you know, it's legitimate to bring that up. It won't change the calculus for New Orleans, but... but, you know, if you can keep him on the right trajectory, you know, I think he might be the type of guy, you know, you see so many teams going away from the traditional point guard. You know, you've got Ben Simmons, you have Giannis, and guys like that who are good enough to sort of break the game in certain ways. And I think he might be one of those guys if it all goes according to plan. And if not, he'll still be productive in other ways to where it's not a total wash.
Is he, I mean, what, not that the NBA cares about position anymore. I mean, being a tweener is now a great thing, whereas 15 years ago it was not. But where do you see him kind of penciled in? I mean, can he defend fours and fives? Is he just a, I mean, a lot of people think he's a five at this point in his career, or will be a five at some point.
Yeah, I think he'll defend fours. He'll be able to play some small ball five. That's always sort of what I've thought. I don't think you can expect him to defend wings. You probably wouldn't want him doing that because he's most valuable when you can kind of park him on the baseline and he can help. You know, he blocks so many shots. Just, he's very instinctive in terms of recovery and help. And I think you want him, you know, down there where he can sort of cover for mistakes, right? So, I mean, if you have to slap a label on it, he's probably a four, you know, four or five, but that, you know, that's why I'm so curious to see. And, you know, the Davis thing does interest me because, you know, hey, maybe you do double down. You're like, Anthony, like, you know, well, at least play 2 months. We're going to try this because they do fit together so well in theory, you know, with Davis being able to step out, you know, they'll cover so much ground defensively. You know, it wouldn't shock me. I don't think it'd be crazy to try it because at the deadline, you know, maybe the price drops a little bit, but I mean, there's still going to be, at that point, maybe you're swaying on the title. So maybe that, you know, everything changes there. So something to think about.
Do me a favor, just pull that closer when you're right where I can have it. No big deal. The one thing that struck me was that David Griffin is now in a really advantageous position because he doesn't have to worry about getting the draft rights to Zion Williamson because he has the draft rights to Zion Williamson.
Right.
And he can turn around and just wait for offers to materialize over the course of the summer. I think it's a little bit too big a risk to wait till February. I understand you can, but, you know, would a team like the Lakers in February say, like, well, you know, we're going to roll the dice that Davis wants to come to us, you know, with for nothing and play for us in 2020? Maybe other teams would, you know, to get those bird rights, would go out and Boston might do it or somebody else might do it. But that seems a bit of a risk. If he's not going to sign a long-term extension, which he's not, you gotta deal him and just get back, you know, whatever you can in return. What do you think, like, how valuable is that fourth pick that the Lakers got? Because that's the biggest new carrot that the Lakers have. I was sitting in the room and I saw Rob Pelinka sitting like 5 feet away from me, 10 feet away from me, and he just clasped his hands together in prayer and kind of nodded his head forward when that fourth pick was announced. When they jumped up from, what was it, 11-4, big moment for the Lakers, but how big a moment was it?
Yeah, you know, I think that's up for debate. I mean, it's obviously a better chip than 11. But if you do look at the draft, I mean, a lot of people think it's a three players, and then after that, it's the big drop off. So, you know, I think if they are going to trade that and try to trade that, it'll be about sort of creating leverage for that pick. I mean, I think if you look at the order, you look after them, I mean, you have Cleveland, Phoenix, Chicago. Those are all teams that, you know, might be interested in you know, backcourt additions, right? So I don't know how they play it, but if there's a way, you know, to put a premium on that pick, you have to come up to get this guy. Maybe that's what they do. I would imagine that they find a way to use it other than, because I don't think there's anyone you can take right there that's justifiable to really, you know, help you win right now with LeBron. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely sort of going to be another big juncture, inflection point in the draft.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it all depends on what you want if you're David Griffin. Do you want kind of the unknown that is the fourth pick in the draft? I mean, who do you have right now penciled in at number four?
I have Jarrett Culver there. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's what I would do.
You think this is right. Three and then a little bit of uncertainty.
I think most people I've spoken to around the league see it as, you know, the top three with, you know, with Zion, with Morant, and with RJ, you know, being the top three. You know, 2-3 could maybe flip-flop, but, you know, after that, I think it's kind of where things are totally uncertain and, you know, people feel less confident in the players available.
Mm-hmm. So in that sense, then, looking at the Knicks, how hosed did they get in all this? I mean, they didn't get that top pick, but, you know, I was looking at some tweets about who the third pick in the draft has been in recent years. Luka Doncic was the third pick in the draft. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Joel Embiid for different reasons, but Bradley Beal, James Harden was the third pick in the draft. There have been some real talent taken at 30, but how disappointed should the Knicks be at falling to 3?
You know, I actually don't think the Knicks are in a bad spot. I mean, again, looking at Cleveland and Phoenix also getting pushed all the way down to 5-6, then you complain, right? But the Knicks are still going to get, you know, whether it's Morant, whether it's RJ Barrett, probably more likely right now, RJ Barrett. I mean, he is at least what they need. You know, there's some concerns with him about, you know, the shot selection and the shooting, but he can really score. And they're going to be able to put the ball in his hands. They need someone to create offense, and that was the biggest problem they had this year. Is they have, you know, guys like Alonzo Trier, you know, sort of plugging in guys like that, trying to find points, and didn't really work. So now, will RJ be the guy who necessarily brings them out of the abyss? Not necessarily, but I don't think it's a bad outcome. If you look around, it's way worse, you know, for the other Cleveland and the Phoenix and Chicago, who just fell down entirely. Mm. So,
do you think that 2-3 is that there's some interchangeableness to those two spots? I mean, Ja Morant has been penciled in a lot of draft boards, including yours, as the number two guy for a while now, it seems like. I mean, is there any wiggle room there for teams that might like R.J. Barrett, teams specifically in Memphis, that might like an R.J. Barrett over Ja Morant?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Morant is a layup at that spot. I just think in terms of upside, you know, he has the most of anyone besides Zion. I think you can make an argument, not that I would, but there's an argument that can be made if you need a point guard, you know, maybe long-term, he does have, you know, at least equivalent type of star potential. But, you know, I think Memphis, that is something to watch, you know, knowing that it's an inexperienced front office right now with the way that the changes that they've made. I'm curious to see what direction they go. Maybe they do tuck themselves into Barrett. Maybe they think, hey, we can – I mean, there's a ton of interest in Morant. Like, all the teams that thought they were going to be picking in the top four have done a lot of homework on him. So I think you could see teams, you know, trying to move up to that spot to take him. So that is what I would be looking for, you know, with Memphis. You know, do they try to get more assets, knowing they're going to convey that future first to Boston at some point? Mm. You know, is this a spot they can use? They can move down, get a guy they like at 4, 5, 6, and then, you know, get more out of it. I don't know the answer to that. That's speculation, but it's something that I've, you know, been thinking about.
So when teams are looking at Morant and that he's the slam dunk that you're talking about, why is he is he a slam dunk? Is it? I mean, I've seen the Russell Westbrook comparisons, the athleticism. You watch that first tournament game; he was fantastic in that game for Murray State, and that must have given him some kind of bounce amongst, you know, the casual observers in front offices that are, you know, probably seeing him and looking hard at him for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just he's such a naturally creative player, and you know there are good point guards and there are pass first point guards, but there aren't necessarily guys who are just like savants when it comes to creating shots. And I think that's the premium skill right now. You know, you talk to, you know, what teams are looking for, you know, to build a team around shot creators. And if you look at, you know, whether it's Harden or Giannis, I mean, they do it in different ways, but these are guys who create looks for themselves, for other people. And I think Ja, you know, if you look at his style of play, he's not going to have to change too much. You know, he's just going to have to keep getting better at what he's good at. You know, athletically, he has the tools. He'll get a little stronger, but, you know, you've seen wiry guys, you know, have success. The body type doesn't worry me so much. I think the shooting's going to get better. You know, I went down there earlier this year, and you know, I've been around him, and I just think he's very well positioned. You know, maybe not rookie of the year. You know, I think there'll be some. It's a big level jump, but in 2 or 3 years, it's like look, De'Aaron Fox is just now starting to break out for Sacramento. Mm. It took him a year. I think it could be a similar type of situation. Mm.
I think you have to take him, too, if you're Memphis, yep. because you're looking at Jaren Jackson, who they hit on, finally hitting on some draft picks after years of just being awful at taking them. And you got Jackson and you got Morant. You got two positions, key positions, whether Jackson's a four or a five, locked in. And I'm looking at those two guys like I can see NBA-level pick and rolls being run with them all day long. You know, just the sheer athleticism and size of and what those two guys can do. That's the kind of combo you can't pass up, can you? I mean, I know Mike Conley's there, but Conley's got some trade value. Got a lot of money on his mm-hmm. contract, but he's got some trade value because yeah. he bounced back really well last year after, you know, suffering through the leg injury the year before. There are going to be a bunch of teams out there, 31 years old, willing to take a chance on Mike Conley and maybe even give you something meaningful back in return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think you got to do it. I think it's overthinking it to not take him there just with, you know, again, creating that opportunity to flip Conley. I don't know, you know, when they'll do it. I expect that they will do it. You know, and yeah, like you said, I mean, he's the type of player who is still good enough that he can swing, you know, the fate of a 43-year win team, you know, get you to the next round of the playoffs type guy if you have that void. So definitely a situation to watch with how they play that.
I hope he does get traded to a good team too. Like, you know, yeah, like just like Marc Gasol playing in the conference finals this year. I mean, Mike Conley deserves to play for a winner, man. He has just been a great ambassador for that team. Like, don't trade him to Chicago for like a seventh pick. Like, I heard some of that from people in the media room last night. Like, maybe the Bulls would, you know, talk to Memphis, you know, trade the seventh pick in exchange for Mike Conley. Don't trade him to Chicago. Don't make him play the last few years of his career, like, on a Bulls team that, you know, should be renamed the 8-seed Bulls. Like, just don't. Like, yeah, that's not worth it.
It's been way too long since we've gotten to see him in big games, mm-hmm. you know, dating back to, you know, when they were really good. So I hope so too.
Yeah, that's disappointing. Just back to Zion for a second. I mean, it's a mortal lock that they draft him at number one. But is there anything in your mind that could be offered that could do you think would sway David Griffin off that draft pick?
I don't think so, just because unless you have the absolute knowledge that there's a guy you can get that keeps Anthony Davis, I don't think there's any way you can do it. Now, maybe if Anthony is like, okay, maybe, I mean, this is conjecture too, but if he's like, you know, I'll stay if you can get me another star, then maybe you think about that. But that's really the only way. I can't imagine there's anything else that would. And again, knowing the situation in New Orleans, they need to inject life into the fan base. They sold, what, 2,000, 3,000 tickets last night yeah. already? Like, that's what came out. So I think knowing that, the optics are not good if you know, you can't really move off that now.
Yeah.
You know, the excitement is already there. It's already building every day. So.
I mean, that really is, like, on another level, that's like a franchise-saving draft pick. Because yeah. they can, like, and I was talking to Alvin about this and talking to David Griffin about this, and they were talking about how Gail Benson and the commitment she's shown to the organization, about how Aaron Nelson comes in as the new strength and conditioning guru, and they're investing, like, $800,000 in changes to the way they do things medically in the locker room. But that was still, if you're looking at teams that could wind up as the Seattle somethings, like that was one of them.
Yep.
Like that was a team on the list because the fan base has not been great over the years. It has not been as supportive as they like to make it seem. And you get Zion, all of a sudden you're guaranteed at least 4 years and probably 7 or 8 of one of the more exciting young prospects in basketball.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, I mean, if we want to put our tinfoil hats on, one of the other teams is Memphis.
Yeah.
And look where they got, right?
Yeah. So maybe that's there's your conspiracy theory. There it is. The NBA, which has been so willing to cut its nose off despite its face, they're going to keep those small market teams entrenched there. With Memphis and New Orleans. All right, I guess I can buy that. And the Knicks, they can take the back seat with that third pick. But they'll, I'm with you on RJ Barrett. I've only watched a little bit of him, but he has the potential to be a really good player, like mm-hmm. an all-star mm-hmm. kind of player in there. And look, then and the Knicks are, you know, hell-bent on adding Durant and adding Kyrie Irving, but even if they don't get those guys, you can start to build something fresh with a guy like Barrett who could be a franchise player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's the worst-case scenario. And again, knowing that everybody feels like they're going to get somebody, you know, it's not a bad start. And again, maybe they'll look to trade that pick to get, you know, we had that conversation with New Orleans. I mean, now New York has a big trade chip too. I think that is going to be appealing to teams, you know, to come up at that spot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, depending on what they decide to do and what they know, more flexibility for the Knicks too.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, not a total loss for them. Not like it is for a Phoenix or a Cleveland.
Yeah, let's talk about them then, because Phoenix and Cleveland, two teams that, well, Phoenix especially, they were hoping to get inside the top two, Cavaliers as well, and that top four. I mean, how bad a night did they have where they fell down to six for the Suns. And where did the Cavaliers fall? Were they five?
Five
for the Cavaliers, six for the Suns. How bad is that for them?
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, just again, I mean, I don't think all of our perceptions of how the odds work are great right now just because of how they change it and flatten, right? But, you know, you do go in hoping, like, oh, we have the best or second best odds, you know, hoping at least you stay there. And to not stay there is still, you know, a gut punch. And now you're picking from what is more or less the second tier of players, if we want to put it in those terms. And now, does that mean you're not going to get someone you like? No. But, I mean, Cleveland's in a tough spot now because, I mean, you know, maybe you're looking at guards at five, but they have Sexton. You know, Morant would have been good enough to say we're going to take him and figure out what to do with Sexton later. But the other, you know, if it's Garland or if it's Coby White, you know, or I don't know if those guys are enough to, you know, to make that case. You know, Phoenix is the same deal. And, you know, Chicago also looking at guards at seven. So, you know, maybe I think I'm curious to see of those teams, if anyone tries to move up looking at guards, you know, knowing they need to get in front. And that's where the Lakers maybe can extract a little value out of four. But yeah, I mean, it's not great for those teams. I mean, the Suns I think would be happy to get a Darius Garland at six, or if Jarrett Culver gets a six, I think they'd be happy with him. But you know, just being the first victims of the change lottery is not the best feeling to walk out of the room, right?
No, it certainly cannot
be.
Because
they definitely took the L.
The area in that 4-10 range, the guys that you're looking at, you know, from Jarrett Culver, as you have in your mock draft, on the way down to, I'm not even going to try to pronounce this Atlanta kid's name, Goga?
Goga,
yeah. I'm not going to even attempt that. But, like, who do you like in that mix the most? Who do you think has the best NBA potential?
I think a lot of people like Garland.
Who left, by the way, apparently.
Who left today. I don't know if that might have been more to control the medical. You know, he has the knee issue. My I don't know if, you know, there was some speculation about a promise. I think I don't really know why you'd promise someone that high anyway. I think it's probably more about protecting the medical information. They haven't done that yet. So that's my hypothesis.
Is that a red flag if they're
not necessarily. It might be just controlling where he goes, trying to get him to Phoenix, maybe trying to avoid having to send his medical somewhere. But, you know, people like him. I'm not totally sold. He played only four college games this year. You know, he's not the biggest guy. He's a good, you know, ball handler, playmaker. I don't think it's necessarily a home run, but again, if you're Phoenix, you need a guard. That's cool. I think there are more questions than answers. I mean, like DeAndre Hunter, I don't think he's a guy who's going to go in the top five, just because knowing that teams are picking for upside, I think most of the people I've talked to are questioning, you know, what the upside really is there. So I think he's more of a guy who ends up in like the middle to back end of the lottery. But then you've got, I mean, Coby White, I like. He's sort of in the mold of, you know, you see bigger guards who make shots. Like, he's kind of like a poor man's Jamal Murray. In some ways, not the same type of playmaker, but it's the same idea. You know, you're going to hit pull-up shots and, you know, stretch the defense, and you can play them with different types of guards. Like, I think there's value in that. I mean, Cam Reddish has been hard to peg all year. Jackson Hayes from Texas is a project, but one of the more interesting bigs. And then, yeah, you got Goga, and you have Sekou Doumbouya, the two European guys who I think are sort of in that late lottery mix too. And then the big wild card is Kevin Porter, who is a guy who teams are, you know, a little scared off by with just, you know, the things you're hearing out. You know, his year at USC, but definitely in terms of just raw ability, I mean, he could justify a top five pick. I don't know if that happens. You got to feel really good about yourself to do that, but I mean, the talent is there.
And you have got him going to Miami, a team that loves talent. Like, they, if there's a flyer to be taken on a guy with talent, Miami's going to take it to go and get him. But you mentioned like protecting the medicals there, and that's the one way that agents can manipulate the process a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit. I mean, people have been asking me for the last 24 hours, like, do you think Zion will, you know, do what like John Elway did back in the day and force his way out of New Orleans? That just doesn't happen in the NBA.
No.
Like, Steve Francis did it successfully to a degree in 1999. Like, when you're an international player, sometimes you can threaten to stay overseas, and that's enough for a team not to roll the dice and have them, you know, Fran Vasquez you. But you just don't have a lot of control when you're in that top spot. But when you get down to that middle range with the medicals, you can sort of frighten some teams off there a little bit, can't you?
And the other thing with Zion is, it is worth noting, just, you know, apropos of nothing, I mean, he doesn't have an agent right now. He hasn't hired an agent yet. And I think that, you know, that'll be interesting to see. I mean, I would bet that he just sits there and is happy to go to New Orleans. And I think it's a good situation for him, too.
Yeah.
If there's anywhere where the pressure might be slightly alleviated, it's a pretty good situation. You know, they have time. You know, they're going to trade Davis. It's going to be like, you know, give us a couple of years to work it out. And, you know, he'll get to sort of be a little away from the big city spotlight. So... Not the worst situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I mean, he would never. I mean, like, the idea that he would go back to Duke is insane.
No, that's not
like,
never gonna happen.
Like, he's not
never gonna happen.
You know, coming off that injury too. Like, even all things being equal, guys don't go back to college if they just they're not gonna try to manipulate where they go. They're not gonna choose going back to college over going to the pros. And Zion Williamson, after having the most high profile college injury that I can remember in a while.
Yep.
Like,
you know, I was there.
Yeah. Like, yep. I mean, it was Sneakergate out in there for a while. So, I mean, he's not going back to college. But I'd be interested to see what happens. Like, Darius Garland leaving was noteworthy with the Combine scheduled to start on Thursday. How much – the Combine's become such a, you know, just an exercise in nothingness. Like, there just has been – the interview process, I guess, is a little bit interesting. But I don't think teams know how to ask good questions anymore anyway, if they ever did. And nobody does anything. Like, I don't know what – I haven't checked the latest of who's doing what, but – you know, Zion's not going to do anything, and the top draft picks aren't going to do anything. And you have to get to, like, second-round guys to look at the 5-on-5 levels, don't you? I mean, you can't get anybody that's considered a lock for the first round to even think about doing 5-on-5.
Yeah, and that's something that I think, you know, I've talked to a lot of teams about today. Just this morning, I mean, you know, talking about, I mean, there's a really long list of guys who are not playing this year, and it seems like every year it gets a little longer. I think some of these guys are guys who could help themselves by playing. And, you know, I get why it happens. But, you know, I think there's a little bit, it's a little bit concerning that every year it seems like there are more guys who pull out. Like, they had to pull 10 guys from the G League camp into the combine just because of guys who they didn't expect necessarily to shut it down. And I think there could be more on the way. So, you know, I think that's a separate debate. You know, how do we improve the combine? How do we get guys to commit? You know, because they do make guys, they give them conditional invitations. But again, once a guy is here, then, you know, and he's already on the schedule and he can just say, I'm not going to play. And, you know, what are they going to tell him? Mm-hmm. He, like, go home? No, they can't do it that
way. I don't know if there's a solution. Like, I don't think
there's not. And I've been talking to teams about it.
Yeah,
you can't
make guys do it. I mean, and it's, I mean, we're kind of joking before. It's honestly like just a social event out here now. It's like everybody kind of gets together and they go through the interview process and then they watch some of the drills. Then I guess, look, I mean, I don't want to diminish second round picks either because those guys have incredible value. Draymond Green's second round pick playing right now. Every team that's done something has, most of them have had a good second round pick on their roster. So there's value in watching that. But the top tier guys, man, you just don't see them.
And I guess conversely, I mean, there is an opportunity for, you know, there are a lot of guys who are, you know, mid second round guys now will have a chance to, you know, if they do play well, you know, maybe move into the late first. I mean, it's not, this is a draft. Everybody views it a little bit differently. You know, there's some level of stratification with, you know, tiers or whatever, but, you know, it's not, I think there are good role players to be found. And I think it's sort of going to be about fit and talent identification and, no, there's going to be opportunities. You know, I think a lot of teams appreciate guys who show up with the combine and play hard. And you've looked the last few years. I mean, Kevin Huerter was a guy last year, came in, shot it great, and then shut it down after one day. And, you know, ended up going, what, like 17 or whatever he went. And 2 years ago, Kyle Kuzma, same thing, shut it down. You know, he had the promise from LA, you know, and ended up fine. So, I mean, for me, philosophically, as someone who spends a lot of time thinking about the draft, you know, I think if you're confident in yourself, play. But again, agents are always protecting their stock. They're worried about, you know, maybe getting exposed, and I can understand that too. And again, at the end of the day, most of these guys have played on TV a billion times and been scouted to death already. So you can see it both ways.
And they don't do a lot of one-on-one stuff either when they get into the team workouts. It used to be where you'd have like three of the top five guys kind of going at each other. Then some of those stories started to leak out about what happened in those workouts. Now it's like the Yi Jian Lan workouts, the you know, player versus chair, like open floor with nobody around him against a broomstick. Like, that just, you know, they're going to rest on their laurels and what they've done if they feel confident they're in the first round.
Yeah, and with how quickly information now can get out if something does happen like that, you know, agents are being protective. And I mean, I don't see that changing. There's no incentive.
No.
Which is what it is.
Yeah. All right, a couple names I want to run by you here. Bol Bol, the center from Oregon. Some medical issues there, some work ethic issues there. If he was, let's put it this way, if he was fully healthy last year, would he be a higher draft pick, or is this kind of where he is because of some of the other ancillary stuff?
Yeah, I think my guess would be if he played a fully healthy season, then, you know, he started the year well. If he keeps playing well the whole year, I think it pretty much at least solidifies that someone's going to take a shot higher. He was always a hard guy to pick, with the concerns teams had about the work ethic and, you know, just about the fit as, you know, a super thin, you know, huge guy, but, you know, very thin, you know, gets pushed around a little bit. I think when you really nitpick the tape from Oregon, I mean, there's some concerns when you're going to throw him into an NBA game and expect him to be healthy. And, hey, how many minutes a game can you play even now, I mean, the list of guys who are 7 foot or above who really play a lot of minutes, it's short. I mean, it's, I mean, you got Bobons now. You got guys who play 15 minutes, but then, I mean, Kristaps, he's hurt, right? And he's 7'3", but he's hurt.
And Bobons is a physically imposing guy.
And like, crazy skilled. So, you know, I think Bol, just because he can really shoot, is going to get a chance. And my guess is that he ends up going, you know, somewhere in between 10 and 20, just because someone will be like, well, we'll try this. Mm-hmm. But again, the other thing is the big thing is the medical, you know, how concerned are teams going to be about the foot? You know, with bigs, there's such a track record of guys re-injuring feet. And, you know, when you're that tall and, you know, it's just, you know, how comfortable will you be taking him? So right now he's a guy who's really, really hard to peg. He has a wide range. And so I'm curious over the next few months, you know, who it works out for and how they control that. Mm.
Another guy you have in the second round is Darius Bazley, who committed to Syracuse, decided not to go, took the year off, worked out on his own. A lot of profile to that when it first happened. Mm-hmm. And now he's a second round pick. I mean, do you think he was always a second round pick, or do you think that his decisions over the last year impacted him?
Based on what I had seen of him, and I probably had seen him play 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. I think probably was going that way regardless.
Because when he started doing this, there was a lot of people who were writing like potential lottery pick, you know.
Like, yeah, I think that was probably premature. Mm-hmm. I don't think I wrote that. I hope I didn't. but, you know, I think late first maybe would have been the best case for him. But people were worried about his skill set. And then he showed up at the Nike Skills Academy last summer and didn't play that great. And, you know, he's long. And I think there is, you know, potential for him to be a good, you know, good defender. You know, his shot is a, you know, big question. I think there's a lot of questions there. But again, you know, because he does have that upside and he's young, and you know, teams are willing to take an 18-year-old and see what happens. And you know, I mean, his agent is Rich Paul, so maybe someone does it as a favor there. I mean, mm-hmm. So I think the odds are that he does get picked. But he's a tricky guy to project long term.
Yeah,
like I mean, I don't know what his role is yet. I haven't seen him in years, so I don't know.
I wonder too what he. I mean, like, what kind of impact that has on other guys thinking the same thing? Because the narrative was, you know, first he was going to go to the G League, and then it was like, all right, well, maybe he's the first guy to do that, take some of the G League money and, you know, get a sneaker deal and all right. that stuff. And then he decides to pass that, probably because, you know, now that we look at it in retrospect, he would have got exposed.
Right,
the G
exactly.
League.
And that's I'm sure that's why they pulled him out.
Yeah.
And, you know, as of this morning, it's the day before the combine. I mean, as of this morning, I was told that, you know, Bazley and also Jalen LeCue, the other, you know, high school kid from Brewster Academy, you know, both of them, as of this morning, are supposed to play in the combine. I'm curious to see whether they do it. I mean, if it were me, I probably would not, just because that's such a big leap in level. Like, you're going up against Admiral Schofield. Like, come on. Like, these are, you know, seeing, like, experienced college guys who are big.
But what's the downside? Like, I mean, I guess to fall out of the draft entirely?
Yeah.
But if you're projected as a mid-second round pick, I mean, isn't the upside worth more than the down?
Yeah, but I think there's, like, a, you know, a confidence thing and, you know, just again, if you're a guy who teams haven't seen a lot of like that, the risk is you're leaving a bad impression on a high level exec, right? As opposed to, you know, if you're, Schofield, I mean, he's a guy who everyone's seen, you know, playing in Tennessee. I mean, if you're a guy like that and you have a bad day, teams already know they like you. Mm-hmm. You know, some teams want you to play bad, so it helps you get to them, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I think if you're a guy like that who has not been seen as much, there's more risk just because of how our brains work. And with scouting, I mean, you see a guy for the first time, you're going to make up a little bit of your mind in some ways. So I'm curious. And I mean, last year, the precedent was Anfernee Simons did not do that and still ended up getting picked by Portland in the first round. Mm-hmm. Or, no, did he go in the 30s?
He went in the first round. I think he went the
first round. Yeah, I think he was like 25, round, right? Yeah. Okay. I couldn't remember if he was that or he was later.
He's a project.
But either way, same idea, right? Yeah. So, you know, not playing worked for him. So I'm curious to see if they actually play.
Mm-hmm. So we are recording this on the eve of the combine. Yeah. As you talk to teams, you know, about what they're going to be looking at in the next couple of days, are there names that come up a lot when it comes to like who they want to see play, whether it's play or talk to or see get measured? I mean, what's the vibe right now the day before?
Name-wise, it hasn't been that crazy because so many of the interesting guys are not playing. So it's hard to be like, you know, we need to see this guy. But, I mean, if we're talking about measurements, I think, one thing that's interesting to look at, I mean, Brandon Clark today, I believe measured with he's 6'8" in shoes with 6'8" and a quarter wingspan, which is I think what people kind of expected if you kind of knew what you're looking at. That's going to be an interesting guy to follow. You know, certainly a divisive player, Clark. I mean, some people have projected him as a late lottery pick. I don't think there's a chance he goes in the lottery just because he's old and you know now this physical thing is going to be an issue. I think he's more of a 18 to 25 is where he might end up. You know, but you know those types of things. do matter. And, you know, having, I mean, that's a fact, you know, how big someone is. So I think that's been something that's come up. But at the end of the day, you know, you got to see how everyone plays tomorrow. There are going to be guys who are sort of on the cusp, you know, who are in the 30s who, you know, are going to be able to get help by all the guys who don't play. Like, mm-hmm. if you think about it, I mean, if everybody in that range sits out, you know, for them, they're stagnant. But, you know, that's opportunity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at least there's that. I'm sure we'll hear a lot more rumor mill-wise. I mean, there's talk that, like, Matisse Thybulle, people think he has a promise in the 20s. You know, he's a guy who's not even here. So that stuff always comes out.
Mm-hmm. What's the not a lot of international players that tend to participate in this stuff, but what's the international vibe in this year's draft?
It's not heavy. I mean, we have the two guys, you know, Goga, Bitadze, and Sekou Doumbouya, who will be, you know, late lottery, mid-first, and then Luka Samanik is here, who is one of the more interesting, probably the third most interesting international guy, you know, playing, he's Slovenian, you know, he was at Basketball Without Borders 2 years ago. He was very good playing for Croatia, or no, sorry, he's Croatian, I think. And he was playing for Croatia in his age group, and teams have liked him in the past. So he's a guy who I hope will play. We'll get to see more of him. And then, I mean, there are international guys who, you know, are playing in colleges. But you've got, like, you know, Namish Keita and, like, Bruno Fernando and guys like that, you know, who are international players but are, you know, playing for college teams. But mm-hmm. in terms of guys who are really coming from straight overseas, there's not as much of it. And I think most of the scouts who I've talked to, you know, internationally this year, were not as high on the group. Mm-hmm. But there's always guys who we've never heard of who pop up and then go like 47.
Usually to San Antonio, right. that range there. Yeah. I'm really interested to see what Boston does with their picks, because the last thing the Celtics need right now anyway, barring a trade this offseason, is three picks between 14 and 22. Just not what they need right now. And they've had some success in that range, but they've whiffed a few times in that range as well. I think Gershon Yabusele was drafted in there. Kelly Olynyk was a good player, but he was most notable for taking before Giannis in that slot. Terry Rozier worked out to a degree, but that's not a range that they've been particularly good at in the past.
Yeah, and you know they don't need is scorers. At least mm-hmm. we know that. And with what Rozier said this week, I mean, who knows what's going to happen there? I mean, he might have driven his own value down.
I think he did. And whatever he was trying to do, and people in Boston have told me they weren't too worked up about it because they thought he was kind of caught up in the moment and was just speaking off the cuff. Mm-hmm. But he effectively told other teams that, like, if you don't want me as a starter, I don't want to be there. Like, mm-hmm. that was kind of the message.
Right.
So that is limiting the pool of teams that were already limited anyway, because Boston's going to put it out there that they're going to match up to a certain number, just like they did with Marcus Smart last year.
Right.
Because he's an asset. Like, they may not want him around long term, but you're not going to give him away for money. Yep. Like, that's all right. What were you going to say about him?
Yeah. So, I mean, same deal. I agree with you. Not the best look there, but yeah, I mean, they don't need scoring. They do have three picks. I mean, maybe they take a project, like maybe Bol Bol is an option where it's like, hey, at least we don't have to play him. He can, you know, heal as long as he needs to, and then we'll figure it out. And, you know, I think those types of guys are probably worth looking at. I mean, there are going to be teams that are going to want to get into the first round. Teams that don't have picks are trying to get in. You know, they'll have options. But like you said, I mean, they are in a really interesting position. You know, just sitting where they are, you know, sort of on the cusp of contention, but with, you know, not knowing what's up with Kyrie, you know, now from Rozier, and you got these young guys who all need shots. Mm. So they're going to have to. I think we'll see them take some type of direction this offseason that will sort of give us a better sense. But I mean, these picks are all chips, but they're not. Together, they are not as valuable to the team as they
Yeah, worst case scenario is Kyrie walks and you have to use all these picks. And then what do you do with them? Like, there's only so many roster spots, too. Like, you almost have to take a draft and stash in that position.
And if you think about how many guys, even Boston has, like, sort of stashed away over the last 5 years because they had so many picks. Mm-hmm. Most of them haven't panned out. So, you know, I mean, Robert Williams is still, I guess, on the bench.
Right? So, Time Lord. Still hanging out on the bench. Still. Yeah. What was that story about him with the cash flow of sneaker that was out there that came in the testimony?
Right.
Yep. Oh, Robert. Oh, man. By the way, before I let you go, what do you make of Beeline going to Cleveland?
Yeah, I think it's a very sensible hire. I mean, what it does is it buys them time. If they want to blow up the team and, you know, if they're going to trade, I don't know if they'll trade Kevin Love, but, you know, certainly that's viable and it's easier to put the face on that. Like, hey, you know, we paid him, but now, you know, Beeline's a coach. We want young guys. We want him to influence as many of our young guys as we can. Now, granted, it would have been better if they'd have won the lottery, and then you're like, oh, we got John Beeline, Zion's mentor or whatever, but that didn't happen. But You know, I think he, at this stage of his career, you know, I think it's an itch probably he needed to scratch. I don't think the expectations will be otherworldly. And I think he'll be able to be there and hopefully sort of be a good influence for the guys like Colin Sexton and, you know, whoever they choose to bring in. So, you know, Cleveland has been smart with in general with how they've operated. You know, they've been able to get extra picks. You know, they have 26, I think, they got it from Houston. So I'm definitely curious just to see who he wants to coach. And, you know, that's the biggest thing. Whenever a college coach makes a jump, I mean, he's played against these guys, scouted these guys, and, you know, teenagers. So I'm always just curious to see, you know, who that coach, you know, ends up wanting.
Do you think he has the temperament to be an NBA coach? That's always the big question. Like, Brad Stevens had the temperament. John Calipari, Rick Pitino did not have the temperament. Where does Beilein fall in that, you know, mix?
Yeah, I think somewhere in the middle. I mean, I don't think he would have been the coach if you had all these superstars who already have their own ways and you try to stick him and tell him what to do. But, you know, in Cleveland's position, you know, presumably they will start to rebuild. They're already kind of doing it. They're still dealing with the vestiges of the LeBron era, you know, the contracts on the sheet. But you know, for that situation where you're bringing in young guys and he knows how to deal with that, and, you know, I don't think he's naive about it. I think it's a good fit, and at least it buys Cleveland time. You know, he'll be good with, you know, the media throughout. I think he'll be patient enough. You know, he didn't sign up for this thinking they were gonna win a title. Mm-hmm. Right. So
it does seem like a, you know, itch to scratch. He's what, 66 years old?
Exactly.
Like,
yep.
You know, I mean, that's not a title team.
There's a reason we're not electing presidents who are 70 years old, right? Hopefully.
Yeah. I think we're there at this point. Jeremy, I know it's a busy couple of days, man. Keep up the great work. You can check out Jeremy's mock draft. It's up right now on SI.com. It's terrific, and I'm sure you'll be updating that, what, like every other day at this point?
Definitely next week, I think. After the combine, there's going to be more. So.
All right, man. I appreciate you joining me.
Always. Thanks, man.